Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast. Today is July 8th.
Yeah. Sheesh.
And we haven't taped in about a month, if not more.
I have no idea. I know we've all been at four corners of the earth. Pop Life has been busy. I think you muted. Are you muted?
Hold on. No, I didn't mute. Did I?
Okay.
No.
I hear you now. Yeah.
Okay. So I think it's going to be like this most of the summer for all of us. So we'll do these when we can this summer, and then hopefully get back on a more consistent schedule in the fall.
Yeah.
So all of us have adventures to tell. So who goes first?
You go first. I think you have the biggest move so far.
I don't know. Your move is big too.
But I haven't done it yet. We start today.
You're doing it in a couple of days, you know?
Yeah.
So my big move was I moved from my beloved New York City to the South, Atlanta. I moved on 6/22. Me and my boy Malcolm rented a U-Haul, drove down to Atlanta. I never want to do that drive again. It's way too long.
That's a long drive.
And way too
it's
hot.
It's not that bad.
Well, South Carolina is not that bad, but when you got to go them extra 2-3 hours, like yeah, New York to South Carolina is 12 hours. When you got to go that's straight. When you got to go that extra 2-3 hours to get to Atlanta,
it was tough. So we left it like later than planned. Like we're supposed to try to leave at like 11 or 12. We ended up leaving like 3 in the afternoon.
Oh, that was terrible. Yeah. Y'all should have just waited and left in the middle of the night and missed the traffic.
Nah, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
That means y'all hit DC traffic.
No, we didn't. We didn't. We didn't.
Everybody's rush hour.
We didn't hit DC traffic. By the time we got to DC, it was about, because remember, we got a U-Haul. We can't go that fast. Okay. By the time we got to DC, it was probably about 7:30. So it was traffic was pretty much over. It was just we couldn't drive that fast, so the ride took longer than if you was in a car where you could dip and zip.
Right.
So we drove. We left for like 3. The longest part of the trip, in my opinion, was Virginia.
Yeah, it's like 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's straight through, and then it took us on a side road. We didn't stay on 95. We went on some kind of 2-lane-ish thing.
In Virginia? Why would you do that to yourself?
We were just going with the GPS. It's the GPS told us to go. I guess it's traffic.
GPS
I don't
know. The GPS didn't know y'all was black.
Yeah, so that was whack. And it rained. It rained like a fucking monsoon.
Oh,
literally the whole state was just pouring. So we got to North Carolina to Greensboro, slept for like, a few hours, and then took it on there from there and got to Atlanta about prime time, like 10:30, 11 o'clock that morning. I'm here. It was a long ride.
That's a lot.
I never want to do that again. But I'm here.
I have zero sympathy for your drive, by the way. But continue.
Yeah, exactly, because your shit is gonna be bonkers. But so I'm here, been here like I guess about 10 days or so now, or something like that. About 10 days. So far so good.
So are you in your actual new spot?
No, I'm staying with Ike right now.
Okay.
So he got a townhouse in Brookhaven, which is the town next to Buckhead. So it's, it's nice, really nice townhouse, real nice area. Seen a lot of people. I'll see more people tonight because Missy's actually having a
birthday party
tonight.
I was invited, and I really debated getting on a plane and coming to Atlanta for that party.
Yeah, because usually she doesn't do parties much at all. Actually,
right.
Very, very rarely. But when she does, they're always very, very intimate. Be like, 15 people or 20 people. And that's what I assumed this is going to be until I've been out the loop. So I'm like, her assistant a couple weeks ago, like, oh, we're doing a thing for Missy on July 8th. I was like, cool. It's an all white thing. White and platinum is supposed to be the theme. And I was like, cool, 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 cool. And then, like, later on, like, literally yesterday, because that's how out of the loop I've been, I'm like, wait, what? Brian Cox is DJing. Wait, what? This is like a party party. It's like a flyer. I was like, oh, this is like a party party.
I got a whole invite, but I got it last, like, Thursday. And I was like,
you've been moving and shaking too. Like,
I know. But I was, because I saw Inka. I saw Inka last weekend. We were both in DC.
Okay.
I saw Inka and Miss Ivy. And but I was really debating. I was like, do I want to get on a plane on Friday? Like, I could maybe get on a plane on Friday, even though it would have meant canceling some other stuff I had to do this weekend. I heavily debated it because I know that Missy doesn't do birthday parties.
And no,
I
was like, never. So yeah, and then there's a lot of people in town. Actually, I don't know if they left because I didn't know this guy Bugs.
Yeah, Bugs. I knew Bugs.
I didn't know him.
Bugs passed. Yeah, I saw that a lot. Yeah. Came down.
Yes, a lot of people came down for his service. Yep. So I think like Brian, my man Brian Kirkland, he hit me yesterday. Like, so like, I think a lot of those people might still be here. So I don't know. And tonight's going to be should be a blast. But anyway, so yes, I've transferred to Atlanta, New York. I was tapped out of New York. I just didn't like the vibe anymore. I didn't like the energy. I don't like the direction that the city's going. It's getting dirtier, more. It's going back to 88. You know, more crime, more junkies on the street, drug addicts. I don't want to say junkies. This gal I know told me that's disrespectful. So drug addicts on the street, more homelessness. I just didn't like and honestly, from the creative standpoint, there's nothing musically really happening in New York anymore. Everybody's either in Atlanta or Los Angeles. Like, there's no real studio activity like it used to be. There's just not moving like that. So instead of burning money, going back and forth all the time, and all my business is kind of down here anyway. I was like, let me just come on down and just kind of set up shop and I can get a lot more done building my business and building my brand. Obviously, being in the same city as opposed to just popping in for a few days. It's not really the way you build a business. So I was in the South. My family's happy. My Kentucky family's like, oh, now you're close to us, 5 hours away. So,
That's sweet.
Yeah, that was nice.
You know. I mean, like, you leaving New York is truly the end of an era. And you left with, like, barely told people.
Yeah, I ain't told them.
Yeah, you ain't had no party or nothing. No, you're like a New York.
The fact that you left New York with no party is wild.
And people have been hitting me like, wait, you moved? I'm like, yeah, I'm gone,
no,
bro.
No, it's wild that you left. It's wild. It's really wild.
Well, can I?
I'm happy for you, but it's wild.
I hope I don't mess up my I guess a good luck, for lack of a better term, by telling this story. I don't think I will. So one day, as I told you, people always talk to me when I walk on the street. It always happens, right? So one day I walk into, sidebar, had a tearful moment with my man Marcos, my barber, who don't speak English, you know what I'm saying? When I told him I was leaving, we were both very emotional. You know,
oh, were y'all crying on Google Translate? That's
sweet. You fuck around, but yes. Like, because he doesn't begin. So, like, I talked into his phone, and it translated what I was saying. And then he his face looked up like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm gone, man. And he gave each other a big ass. So he tried to give me my money back. I was like, nah, chill, Brian.
Aww.
Yeah, that's my guy. Whenever I do come back to New York, I'm going to see Marco. And sidebar before I forget. Sean, bruh, got to meet my Jewish grandmother from my building.
Wow.
That was a very, very hilarious experience, I have to add. Yeah. It was very authentic as well. She was a sweet lady.
Oh, yeah. And she was very upset. She was very upset I was leaving. Because I had even though we literally lived next door. She lived in 5A, I lived in 5B.
Uh-huh.
But we didn't see each other. Like, she's old. She doesn't come out every day. You know?
Right.
So I would see her daughter more. So her daughter lives there. So I saw her daughter a couple weeks before and told her, maybe a week before, and told her I was leaving. And her daughter was like, oh my God. So her daughter had told the mother. So I was, were packing up the truck. I was definitely going to go knock on the door before I left, though. But she happened to just come outside.
Yeah.
She was going somewhere. And she came up and gave me a big hug. And I
saw
Sean and Malcolm. And she was like, I don't talk to anybody, but I love him. I love him.
Can we also talk about, though, like, you live in a building, like, the buildings over by where you live are not easy to get into.
No.
And you left that apartment, but whatever.
And there was literally 3 black people in that building, including myself. So it's me and a couple. That's right. It. Everybody else in that building is pretty much Jewish.
Yeah.
And I've been living there for 20, 30, 40 years or whatever. So, yeah, and I left the crib too. But, yeah, so yeah, I'm here, man, you know. Yeah, but I'm happy. I really am. I don't, you know, it's only been a few days, so I'm talking shit, but I don't miss, you know, New York. I mean, I did a lot there. I'll always love it, but it just wasn't the energy for me. I just started feeling antsy and tight. I didn't want to be there anymore, you know? So getting away has been a good thing for me so far. So yeah, so that's my journey.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Listen, like I said, I'm happy for you.
And I'll do, you know what I was thinking, and it, you know,
we'll at some point you have to do a party, Jeffrey.
If, like, God willing, if things work.
You want to do a birthday party?
No, I want to do a birthday party. But what I would do probably is I probably would do one more holiday party.
Okay.
I would maybe do one more holiday party, like this year, if I could, you know, if things work out. I would do one more, like, holiday party where everybody could come, and because you're right. So anyway. I'm walking to the barbershop, and this Indian man, a Pakistani Indian, I think he's an Indian man, walks up to me, and he says, "You are troubled."
No.
And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "You're not good. You're not good." So he starts talking to me, right? He does this trick. I don't know, some type of trick where I wrote down a name, a number, and a color or something like that. He's talking to me. And he, like, guessed what I did, what I wrote. This is literally on the corner of 184th Street in St. Nicholas Avenue.
Right.
Like, he's just talking to me, because I was leaning on the mailbox texting something.
Yeah.
And he's, like, talking to me, and he's like, "Don't tell people what you're doing before you do it."
Oh. Okay.
And that's why I didn't really tell a lot of people that I was leaving.
Okay.
He was like, "Do what you're going to do." All right, fam. I hate you live.
Sorry.
He said, "Do what you got to do, and then you can let people know. But don't let people know your plans too much beforehand."
Right.
And that's really the main reason why I didn't tell a lot of people.
Right.
Only,
right,
like, my kind of intimate circle. So.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that well, was you've the done reason. It I wasn't now, being shady.
No, I didn't think you were being shady. I was just like, you're not a New York transplant. You are a New Yorker.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's very different.
But it's funny, like, everybody, and people have had your same sentiment, and I don't know, I never thought of myself in this way. Like, you're a New York Staple. I was like, I am? What are we talking about? Like, I never thought about
New York.
I didn't realize it until people started saying it to me. Like, I said, you don't realize things sometimes. Or people tell you some things that you can't see for yourself. And that was one of the things, like, "You're leaving New York, not you." And I'm like, "What's the big deal about me leaving? Shit, niggas leave every day."
Right.
But, you know. But, anyway, yes, that's me. That's me. So who's next? Inca?
I could go next.
You go next with your journey. Your upcoming journey, I should say.
Well, it kind of already started. Dropped Ivy off with the grandparents. This week, which is crazy because we never really been in the house without her.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. So far, my marriage is surviving this move to Colorado.
That's good.
We are spending way too much time together, and I want to beat this nigga up a lot. But the house is empty, it's clean. We're heading
there's
out.
Nothing on the walls behind you. With
he's sitting
boxes.
On the floor.
No, there's the walls are blank, and there's always
this
stuff.
Pillow is trash. Like, nothing is. Yeah, I'm not comfortable. I'm ready to get to my new house, but I think we're gonna get there in 6 or 7 days. We're gonna really stretch it out and sidebar. Y'all are so trash because I put in the group chat that I'm coming to the city, and all of y'all were like, "Crickets."
I missed.
Well, I knew I wasn't gonna be there.
Only
when did you say you were coming?
No, she the other day. It was yesterday.
Yeah.
I didn't say nothing because I knew I wasn't gonna be there.
The first leg of our trip kind of got canceled. So we're homeless for 2 days. So we were like, well, let's go to the city. We never get to go anywhere without Ivy, so we're gonna add New York City just for a blip.
You said you wanted some city food. What does that mean exactly?
Oh, see, I'm not going to be here either. I'm going to be in Philly for a day.
Oh, okay.
I'll be back in on the 10th, though. It depends on what time. How long are y'all here on Sunday? like all day, or you leave?
I don't know. We might be leaving Sunday night or Monday morning.
Okay, I'll text you because I'll be back early Sunday.
Okay, yeah.
This is not something I can share with you. I'm not ready to share this whole thing yet with the listening audience, but I have a rendezvous in Philly.
Ooh. Gotcha.
Well, all right.
Let me just say, though, that Naima was fucking beaming when I saw her in and I was glowing. Like, okay, then, sis.
It was glowing. Okay.
Let me mind my business, but I see you.
No, y'all was definitely minding my business, but it's okay. Y'all definitely all in my business.
Times. And shout out to MVP and his adorable parents.
Yeah. And
the nursery that made me cry, which was like.
No, okay, y'all, wait. I got to tell the story. So,
what's MVP?
This is the name of a baby boy, and we were at his parents' house. Actually, our friends, Brittany Pagnett Cunningham and Reggie Cunningham, who I like to call the Nobles, mutual friends that, like.
Yes, part of the ecosystem.
Oh, okay, funny, like, I don't know them through Inca, so I always forget that Inca knows them so well. And, like, one time I was about to be like, my friends just had a premature baby. Oh, wait, they're Ivy's godparents, not mine. So anyway, so Inca was over there. I went over there. I was in D.C. Let me back all the way up. I did a live taping of this podcast, All Music is Black Music, for Sirius and Pandora with Salema Masekela and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were there. It was at the museum. It was at the NMAAHC. So okay. It was very cool to spend the last day of Black Music Month
in the Blacksonian. Let's go.
Blacksonian on stage at the Blacksonian at that, especially after June was so big for Music Sermons Black Music Month Challenge. Like, it took off. I don't know what lit the tinder. I don't know what the tipping point was, but I mean, I was in a room of people in Nashville and somebody was like that. Like, three people were like, that's you? I do that every day. Like, it was so wild. So, and one of them was like,
this month were one of them was like 23.
Yeah, like one of them was like 23 years old and one of them was 40 something. And they were like, yeah, we do that every day. I was like, that's crazy. So anyway, it was a great high and like period on the end of that month. And then I stayed in D.C. because I had, again, rendezvous. But anyway, I stayed for a couple of days. And then I went over to Brittany and Reddy's house, saw Inca and Ivy. So they're taking us through the house because they just moved in recently-ish. And they took us into the nursery, which is this beautiful, like, Montessori-appointed, neutral.
But very, like, Black at the same time.
And I mean, just so thoughtful, like, even though their son is not yet, it's still an infant and not yet like toddling, walking, anything like
that. Where do they live?
They live
just outside DC.
Just outside of DC. Just outside, like almost on the College Park side, like just outside of just
I would still consider it DC because you literally have to take an exit through DC to get to their house.
Okay. Yeah, true.
So it's technically Maryland, but it's DC.
Right. So, you know, he's an infant, but everything's at his level. All the hooks are little toddler level. Everything in the closet, like, there's bookshelves.
There's a
like,
little reading nook.
And the a book little reading nook with a pillow. And all
the books are in, like, a rainbow, like, formation.
She goes in there, and she's like, this is so beautiful. And she was like, oh, my God. And we look over, and we're like, yo, are you actually crying? Like, she was
in the closet. Crying all the time.
Inca was standing in the closet crying. And how beautiful. Inca
cries for everything. I just know the difference that, so like, beautiful. The difference that a baby who didn't come home right away, like, and like putting them in a space that is uniquely their own, like, very transformative.
Because they had to leave them in the NICU just the way
114 like, days.
Yeah.
Which is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just like him having his own, like, I don't know. I got
his
emotional.
Own, his own
it was
space.
So beautiful. Yeah. Though. Like,
it was a really beautifully done nursery. And again, very anticipatory of like 2 years from now, a year and a half from now, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, he'll be able to grow into, there's a little, like, the first thing you see when you walk in is he has a little kitchen. But it's it's like this little
and like kitchen. A little lemonade stand type
a little lemonade
thing
with like stand, a little wooden cash register. so cute. But like I said, everything is at his level, is at toddler level already. It's ready. It's ready for the moment when he's ready. So it was very thoughtful. It's very cute and sweet. And Inga had like a moment in the closet where she started crying.
I also get really emotional when Ivy is comfortable somewhere. Yes. When she's uncomfortable, she's right at my hip. So for her to just be kind of wandering around the house and not attached to me, like, it means a lot. She's not like that with everybody. So
Wait, so April, when you say like Black city food, Latin city food, or like
give me your recommendations.
If you want to nigger it out, I mean, I say you're going up to City Island.
We are staying in Manhattan.
Okay.
We're going to probably head over to Queens to get one baseball game in, since I think the Yankees are out of town.
Yeah, okay. All right. So,
but other than that, we have no plans. So,
you could eat in Astoria. They got a lot of, you know, kind of various type of foods in Astoria. Boulevard. If you want to stay, I'm always recommend Uptown, either Harlem or go to Dykeman.
What I was thinking. Like, we gotta get
go to Harlem. Go to Dykeman and go to either Mama Juana's, Papacito's, one of those two, Papacito's or Mama Juana's.
This is a very full Dominican
experience, and the food is banging, and the drinks are strong. You guys have a good time.
Okay.
I see Inca writing it down.
Hey, where did you just sell them? Mama Juana's?
Mama Juana's or Papacito's.
Oh, Papacito's. Okay.
Those are
Mama Juana's is Mama's favorite.
Yeah, those are the two most popular restaurants on Dykeman Strip. And you eat outside and all that. It'll be fun. It'll be good for you. So tell us some more about. So you're driving across country.
Driving across country. Going to hit three baseball stadiums. We're going to a comedy show in Kansas City. I think it's like a podcast taping.
Okay.
And I don't know. That was not my part of this move. Okay. I was not planning any of that shit. Travis.
Why not?
I've been cleaning carpets for like 4 days. So,
Travis clearly mapped this out based on a baseball schedule, which is hilarious.
He did.
Bless you for going along with that, because let me tell you what Naima can't do in person. Baseball game.
Baseball game in person is fun.
They're 82 hours long. Are you fucking kidding me?
You don't have to stay for the whole thing.
I promise you, it feels way longer when you're watching it on television than when you're at the park. Like smelling that grass and like hearing the mitts pop and the
And the little bullshit they do in between plays. Like, they have the audience involved. It's always, like, some kid running bases. Like, I love all that stuff.
I'm like, give me that near the seventh inning stretch. Then I'm good. I can do, like, the last.
Yeah, you ain't got to stay the whole game. But, like, you're gonna have a good time. And then you get to see each stadium, and obviously the vibe of each stadium and city is completely different.
It's so different. Like, we could write a book on the differences between Canadian stadiums and American. Like,
Totally they are different. Sneaky big.
Yeah. Yes.
Baseball players are so sneaky.
Yeah.
Sneaky big.
Yeah.
Big niggas, for sure.
They're not no little dudes, you know? So you're excited about the move, Inga?
I'm so excited. I just want to get in my house. Like, I'm ready.
I got you. That's how I felt when I was driving. I was like, I want to get to Atlanta. I
just want to get in there.
All right.
I'm tired of cleaning, though, so I'm starting a savings account for when we move again, because I'm not doing this shit next time.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm never, the next time I move, I'm having somebody pack my shit and unpack my shit. Like, I'm doing all of that. Like,
The moving shit is garbage.
Well, we have the movers or whatever. It's just all the little shit. It's
like, the little shit.
I don't want to clean these baseboards. This is trash, and I'm over it.
All right,
who's
next?
Yeah, Sean, where you been at?
Yeah.
Who's next in the why we ain't taped in a month?
segment of Pop. I'm in Atlanta now.
I'll see bro tonight. Bro, since I moved, bro came by the crib. He was supposed to give me some furniture to take down with me, and he ended up not being able to give me the furniture and taking one of my pieces.
I'm the first nigga in history to leave with more shit that I came with to drop off.
That's hilarious.
I was like, nigga, what is happening right now?
I should have got the 15 footer.
You couldn't fit it in a truck.
Yeah, it was full. Truck was
we had to break. They had to break down the bike.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's how little room there was.
Nigga,
there was no.
Pay the extra $19 to get the longer truck.
They're like, these handlebars ain't going to fit. But, that's the one thing about moving. You always have more than you think you have because you just look at the furniture. You don't think about how all your stuff
all the shit, yeah.
We have
yeah.
so much shit. And I have been throwing things away mercilessly.
Me too.
I do not care.
The mover came downstairs because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to fit. Maybe I could get one couch in. And then the mover was like, yeah, he got his shoes up. I was like, oh, nigga, that's a wrap. All them boxes of shoes, it's done. So, but yeah, we've been on a world tour a little bit. But we've been in Atlanta, had to come back real quick, come back to Atlanta for work. And then we did New Orleans. We did Essence Fest, which was mostly work.
Yeah, talk about that.
It was mostly work. And it's, you know, this is now maybe 16 years. So out of the last, say, 18 years, I've probably done about 14 Essence Fest. And I got maybe one or two more in me. Maybe.
I feel you on it.
I'm ready to tap out.
Does it feel different post-pandemic than pre-pandemic?
Well, yes. Definitely it feels different because of the crowd size. Because
the crowd size was growing and now it's coming back down.
Yes, the crowd size was maybe 2018. Maybe was like, I was like, yo, this is a lot of fucking people.
It was like, too many people. Like, yeah, it was too many people to walk the street. Yeah, period.
That was the year after Girls Trip, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it changed. Yeah. So it grew. 2018 was the year, like the year of Girls Trip. It was already kind of tilting a little bit. Mm-hmm. But by 2018, like I usually, not to interrupt Sean, but I used to always come in. I haven't done as many Essence Fests as he has, but I haven't missed many in the last 11, 12 years. Like mm-hmm. I think I've gone every year except one, with the exception of these pandemic years. I think I've gone every year except one since 2011. And then before that, I had gone for several years, like in the mid 2000s. And the year before Katrina. And then when they came back mm-hmm. after Katrina, I think I went to the first one. So I usually would get in on like Thursday because most people would come in on Friday. Programming started on Friday. Now programming starts on Thursday. So I would usually come in on Thursday so I could just chill, go to dinner, do whatever. Thursday, my flight was full of chicks with like matching t-shirts,
girls lemonade bring.
Yeah, they Girls Trip t-shirts with the names on the back, Charmaine and motherfucking Phyllis and all of them. The line trip. You know what I'm saying? Like the line anniversary.
That movie did so much for the festival. It was like a 2 hour ad.
Yeah,
but then 2 hour commercial.
After that movie, I was like, oh, I can't go no more.
Well, that's the only problem, right? It's like, the thing about Essence Fest that I always said was dope, and I used to tell people, is like, you can make it, because it's New Orleans, mm-hmm. you can make your Essence Fest experience whatever you want to be. If you don't go to mm-hmm. no shows, there's a bunch of parties, right? And they're even more now, there's a bunch of parties. If you could do the convention center during the day and like make a whole day of it every day because you got little mini mm-hmm. panels, conversations, vendors, food, whatever. You can do what we used to do was a combination of, you know, I would do a couple of shows. I did every show once and I was like, never again.
Never.
So I would do 2 out of 3 nights and then like one night it would just be like eat, drink, mm-hmm. chill. Whatever.
Hit a party, yeah.
Yeah, like chill. So but when you're working, to Sean's point, on the if you're there and you actually have to do stuff, mm-hmm. even though New Orleans is small, with that crowd, like there was so much traffic in 2018, like everything took forever to get. Like I ended up walking mm-hmm. if it was like less than 2 miles, I just walked it because it didn't make sense. Like, so I'm out, it's high, and it's also like oppression high in New Orleans, right?
Yes, Lord, especially in July.
In July, oh my God. Absolutely.
Hot and swampy. So all those people, all that heat, all that traffic, I was like, oh, it's too many of these motherfuckers here. So I was curious to get back, to let Sean get back to what he said, what it would feel like now. But when you're working Essence and you have mm-hmm. to be certain places during the day and you don't get that time to yourself, and then you have to make certain show face at night, it's a different vibe for sure.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, we talked about this kind of in the group chat about how they have kind of shifted and they're focused on a much younger demo. And I think that that's partly due to advertisers, and that's fair, right? Mm-hmm. Like you want to, you know, you want to have customers for 30 years, you know, so I understand why they went that way. It's indicative. It just tells me that this is just not really my speed anymore. Because we're like 1 year away from like Kodak Black up there on the main stage.
No,
like
we're
legitimately
for Travis Scott or something like
the
that.
The Migos and the niggas is about to be. And again, God bless. But for me, that's not necessarily what Essence was. And they kind of had these themed nights, so you would kind of do old school night, and it would be Lionel Richie and Al Green and mm-hmm. you know, motherfuckers like that could do an hour or a, you know, hour and 15 minute show, no problem. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of see the trend going toward they'd rather have, you know, five acts doing 20 minute sets than, you know, sort of those legacy acts. And that's fair. Again, that's the nature of the festivals and how the Coachella's and the multiple stage.
But I liked Essence because it wasn't a festival. It was just more like a series of regular ass concerts. I have a seat. That's, you know what I'm saying? And like the smaller, newer acts that can't carry a main stage, you go to the Super Lounge, right? So it's like, I'm a person, I'm happy to admit, and this might be because I am like officially approaching old Black woman status. Once I'm comfortable with some shit and it's my shit, don't change my shit. Like,
oh, that's completely me.
Yeah. I don't change my shit. And I mean, I get it. I get it that like the millennials growing up, they aunties now too. That's cute. Like, it's funny to me that they were still calling it Auntie Con this year, because I was like, they been moved past that. Are you kidding me? Like, Essence, you could have called Essence Auntie Con.
But I feel like that's not even tailoring to millennials. Like, I think they're trying to go after Gen Z.
And see, that's not even what Essence's demo is as a publication.
It's not, but millennials is broke.
I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
But that's the thing. Even though Essence as a publication, I mean, they really, like, this is their flagship thing, right? Like, this is really what is keeping the fucking lights on. And
Absolutely.
And it seems to me that the publication has become more of a legacy to the bottom line than an actual important piece of the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was married in New Orleans, right? Like, I've gone to New Orleans for Mardi Gras. I've been, like, I've really done that shit. Like, I've done all the parades, and that's the part of the New Orleans that I enjoy and that I love.
Mm-hmm.
This part, you know, I'm kind of growing out of it. And, I mean, if you've done some shit for, like, 15 years, that happens.
Yeah, it just happens.
What I'm saying? Like,
let me ask a question. So, do you think... I mean, I kind of, you know the answer to the question, but like, do you think there are a lot of people like in your boat that are feeling the same way? Like, I've just kind of grown out of it.
I don't necessarily
or growing out
think,
of it. I should say.
I don't necessarily think that, because even whether it's young people or old people, when it's your second or your third Essence, it's still very
it's fresh. Still fresh. Yeah,
you haven't really experienced it all, right? Like, so I know, like, this time I wanted to actually go to the convention, not to walk around, but there's an artist that comes every year and I wanted to actually go buy some art from
him. Right.
And I just didn't get a chance to.
Okay.
You know, we were actually working because we were filming, we were taping a show.
So
we're wake, you know, like our day is like still a legitimate work day. So you're getting up and you got emails.
You ain't just got a schedule just to do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, you got logistics and shit like that. And like, you know, like, yeah, nigga, like, I don't know that I want to wait until fucking 11 o'clock to see New Edition. Nigga, I'm tired. Right. I'm tired. Right.
That's the other thing. Yeah. New Orleans days, by the time you've been in that, if you did shit during the day, like real shit, by the time you've been in that heat, going to eat, because just even trying to structure your day if you're going to a
eat,
show to
girl.
Eat, and have time to drink a hurricane before you got to go to a goddamn show at the Super Bowl.
And Janet and New Edition, I think they started almost midnight New Orleans time.
Yeah.
And then you got to take a nap and then you got to walk there because they're getting an Uber is laughable.
It's actually not that bad. I try to, when I go to this, when I leave the Superdome, I'll try to patronize the taxis, the local guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Because they don't really, you know, Uber is just such an easy thing that they don't really get any action.
Yeah. Right.
But you have to leave early. Like you gotta leave, can't wait till the set is over. So my thing is to stay within walking distance of the Superdome.
I did that one time and it was just a sea of people walking back.
Yeah, that's when I went.
It's literally just thousands of people.
When I went in 2019, cool. That's what it was. We just walked back, and it was just like a sea of people.
People start thinning out.
People were like, "Yeah, but then okay, hey, this is my hotel. further.
Yeah,
this is the highest over here. Further down.
Make connections in that little keep
talking and shit. Too. People stopping to get food from the local.
Way back.
Yeah. So it was. You know, again.
I heard that, Inga.
God bless. Yeah, yeah, but exactly. I think I got one or two more left in me. You know, the closing acts and the bigger acts. The acts that first of all, I'm not a big fan of these. I'm not a big fan of arena shows. Right. I've never been. I like theater shows, and I like things that are a little more intimate. And I enjoy like flatfoot singing. Like that's what I enjoy. I'm not a fan. Like I don't need 37 dancers
and the pyro and all that shit.
The choreography.
No, I totally understand why you do it because people enjoy it. But for me, you know what I'm saying? Like me myself personally. I'm not saying, look at the moves, look at the shoulders. You know. So God bless. But other than that, you know, we came back and literally we just been, you know, packed and coming back to Atlanta because of
rolling.
And probably LA next. I don't know when the next time I'm gonna be home and in my bed, but you know. We shall see. Well, in my home in Jersey, I should say.
None of you saying, the home crib. Yeah. All right. So now, Nye, what's your reason that you're taping the Pop Life podcast?
So honestly, I have the least hectic schedule out of the rest of y'all, but I just put a really big project to bed that I have been working on for most of the year that took up a lot of my bandwidth. I'm part of this organization called the Black Music Action Coalition, which is a nonprofit group. It's a bunch of managers, lawyers. We formed in the wake of the show Must Be Paused to basically challenge, you know, systematic systems and biases in the music industry. But I was working on a report about the historic racism in country music and like going all the way back to, you know, hillbilly music versus race music in the 20s. So it was so much bigger than I expected it to be. It took so much more time just to make sure I got it right, you know? And I finally finished it. I mean, I'm talking about y'all 120 something citations and like a 40 something page document. My mother was like, you just wrote a dissertation.
Peace to Charlie Pride, peace to sister,
Rosetta Thorpe.
Rosetta Thorpe. And,
but peace also to like, there are so many stories of Black artists in country who like, they either couldn't get a deal or they got a deal. They had one or two songs and then the label just didn't do nothing with them. Radio couldn't play them. And honestly, it's really been kind of like a Jim Crow system on Music Row.
Still is.
It is. That's what I'm saying. It's been so. What we
God bless me. What's the gal's name? God bless her for cutting through as much as she has.
Kane and Jimmy Allen and Darius. Yes, but like Mickey Guyton is a perfect example. Mickey's been on Capitol Nashville for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Mickey has been one of the most visible country music artists. Period. Not just like of color. Period. For the past 2 years, Mickey hasn't been on the country music chart since 2016. Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like the Grammy nominated song, like that got no airplay. That song got noticed because she put it on socials.
I'm sure y'all discussed the huge backlash when
the Dixie Chicks.
No, no, not them. I mean them too. But when Beyonce did the what's the group?
With the Daddy Lessons with the Chicks. Yeah.
No. It was another group. When they did Unbreakable, the country version.
No, I didn't talk about that. I talked about Daddy Lessons. I talked about Daddy Lessons because she submitted it. It's literally a Dixie Chick sample. She submitted it to the Grammys in the country category and it got rejected.
Yeah, they did.
But they performed it on the CMAs.
Yeah. I can't remember that group. And they're good. I really like that woman's voice. Mm-hmm. Damn, Kevin. But it's a huge country group and they did Unbreakable, like a country version. Right. Maybe it was also on the CMAs they performed it. And they wanted to kind of make it a single, like a air quotes remix because, you know, it's Beyonce. And, you know, Beyonce's from fucking Houston. Of course she likes country music. And it was a huge thing where they wouldn't, the country radio stations wouldn't play it. And they kind of made up all these excuses. So even like, basically the biggest pop star in the world.
Right. Well, that was my point.
Who's from Houston, where the biggest rodeo in the country happens every year.
And she couldn't get on country radio.
She still couldn't get through it.
Well, my point was like, when I mentioned it, my point was like, B's charted on damn near every genre chart, like including Latin, right? And again, from Houston, she does a song. It's a Dixie Chick sample talking about her daddy shooting, drinking, all this other stuff. And it's like, you reject it from country music category? Like, why? Sonically, it's
like
country.
There's literally a banjo in that record.
Sonically, it's country. Lyrically, it's country. Like, you can't explain it other than it's because Beyonce is black, right? Same thing with Lil Nas X, because there was a hit right after that with Breland. Was it Breland? One of these guys, The Get Up. Which was basically the same kind of thing as Old Town Road, except this guy just was like within the natural system. So basically, it was just looking at the excuse. And the other thing about country music that's different, not to go on a whole tangent about this, but the Country Music Association has a wield over the genre that no other genre experiences from a trade organization, except gospel a little bit. They really determine what the genre is going to sound like, feel like, look like.
Yeah.
But streaming is about to change that. Country is just now starting to feel streaming's influence. And that's going to change it because those numbers you can see in real time, those people, those whatever. So anyway, I finally put that to bed. Like I said, it was a lot of work. Literally, I'm combing through 100 years of history. And, you know, for every page that's in that document, there was easily 50 more pages that I read to get to that page. You know what I mean? So,
Sorry about the group's name is Sugarland.
Oh, yeah, Sugarland. Okay,
Sugarland, they did a replaceable with Beyonce on the AMAs. In 2017.
Right, so now on the CMAs. Okay. Which was around the same time as the Daddy Lessons thing. So that's
It was all around the same time.
Yeah. So I finally put that to bed. We went to Nashville a couple of weeks ago, did like a little panel about it, which was really great because like Deanna Williams was there, who we all know, well, at least me and Sean and Jeffrey know. I think you probably know who she is, but she's like a black journalist, like pioneer, but also she used to be married to Kenny Gamble. She helped Kenny co-found Black Music Month. So it was really an honor to have her there because it was still in Black Music Month. She's become like a mentor and a friend. But also we have Frankie Staton, who, if you get a chance, Google her. She actually used to be president. There was a Black Country Music Association in the 90s. Mm-hmm. In the 90s. And they actually made like a serious dent. The industry actually was paying some attention to them, but they just couldn't, you know, and they started like a Black country music showcase to prove that like the fans were there, the talent was there, but they just couldn't keep it going. But she happened to be there. But there's a lot about Nashville. I mean, I'll just say this before I move on. If you are a Black person who don't have any roots in Tennessee, you assume that because Nashville is the home of country music, you assume that Nashville is probably super white, super racist.
No, Lord knows, it's a huge Black population.
Lord knows, if you go to Broadway in Nashville, all you're going to see is a bunch of, it's also become like the new bachelorette capital. So if you go to Broadway, all you see is a bunch of like white people screaming and going woo and all that other shit. But Nashville is actually a liberal city in Tennessee, in a liberal county.
What's the commas there, right? Isn't Tennessee State there?
Tennessee State University is there. Yeah. And also Fisk is there.
Yeah, Fisk, yes. Black College is there,
And there used to be a really thriving Black music business on Chitlin' Circuit, what's the name of the street? It's not just I'm totally blanking on the name of their stretch that was bisected by the highway. And so all the businesses closed down. But it also is like the biggest live music venue in the country. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. none of the music spots are owned by Black people. None of them.
Mm. On purpose.
All white. On purpose. All white.
And, so I've been saying, and I don't know if I get in trouble for it. I mean, who gives a shit at this point? I've been saying the clear cut racism is how much money the music business and the music publishers have dumped into Nashville.
Right.
Right. But they won't do the same in Atlanta.
Right.
And Atlanta generates probably the same amount of bread and you know, money and publishing, you know, all the look on the charts, you know, all the shit is coming from here. Shit, Beyonce, Dream and Tricky, they live here. Like it just right. but they will not build any. There's no offices here.
Right.
There's no Warner Brothers Records is on Peachtree. No, right. There's nothing.
Well, a lot of Black producers, recording artists and stuff, they're starting to want to go to Nashville because there is an energy there, right?
Yeah, but also because there's structure there.
Right.
Structure there. Atlanta's a very creative place, but there's no structure. Like, you can't be like, I'm going to go down to so-and-so and do a meeting.
Right.
You got to like, pull up at the studio or whatever. You can't, it's like I can't pull up at the Sony publishing office and talk about, you know, whatever issues I might have. There's nothing, and I think that's totally done on purpose because Georgia has a 30% tax break off top if you build business here. So, like, financially, it makes all the sense in the world to build a business here, but they won't do it because they don't, I feel like, they don't want to empower the Black people.
Say that it's that they don't want to empower the Black people. What's unique about Nashville is that starting in the mid 50s, it was decided that was going to be country music's hub, period. So like, if you don't record and work there, you don't pop the same way. There are very few people who don't actually move to Nashville, record in Nashville, Nashville system who can't pop.
So you totally have to
localize. If we said that all R&B, like I feel like in the 90s, it was almost like that in the early 2000s. It's like,
yeah, when LA was here and, you know, Jermaine.
And Hitco and all that.
Yeah, but then they, you know, those guys moved to LA and so on. Right. And all that. That's one of the reasons I always say that LaFace, besides obviously mining Atlanta for all the talent that it has, was very successful. It's because LA had a damn office.
Yeah.
They had an office that you could go to and like do showcases and meet people. He had a staff. He had marketing people.
But that's what I'm saying. Somebody has to be the first person to say, we are going to centralize these businesses here in Atlanta and create the hub here in Atlanta and build it out. Cause that was happening. Right. But then people, like you said, started moving, going other places. If that happens, it's almost like you have to almost force people to come to you. And that was the other thing that's always been wild to me about Nashville. It's like, if you work at a label, the Nashville division is as far away as the fucking international team for you. Like you don't ever talk to them. You don't see them. Nobody mentions them. They're a completely separate arm of the business. They operate like as their own, it's like its own little world.
Yeah, I get that, let's not forget, like LaFace was financed by at the time Arista to do this.
Of course,
it's the same way how they all the Latin labels in Miami. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, which makes perfect sense. But it's financed by Sony. It's Sony Latin. It's, you know, Universal Latin. In Atlanta, there's no, you know, Universal Black. It's just like niggas just go to the studio and then send the records out to LA. But anyway, that's a tangent.
That's a different thing. So anyway, I put that to bed. June was great. Like I said, Black Music Month with Music Sermon, the challenge took off to the point where I had to extend it to Black Music Summer. Relaunched my merch. I was on Vice. I think I had mentioned on the show before, I taped two episodes of Vice's Dark Side of the 90s, which I think initially it wasn't a series. I think initially it was a documentary and then they spun it out into a series. That's what I think it is. Because this is season one. I thought it was season two. It's season one. But there is another Dark Side of the 90s you can go watch. So I think it must have just been, maybe they had a documentary and they spun it out into a series. Anyway, the season premiere was about Arsenio Hall. I was in it a lot, surprisingly, more than I expected. There's another episode coming about Fox TV and how to use Black programming to basically get work off the ground.
Yeah, that's what they
that'll
do.
That'll be and how that became a blueprint for like UPN,
and the CW, and all of them. Same shit.
So that airs on, I think, July 19th. And I have some other really big news, but I probably can't announce it for a few months. That came out of that. But listen, it's been a good month. Y'all know what I'm gonna say because we're past the 4th of July.
Oh, Jesus.
And
Christ.
We need to start Christmas shopping.
The year is over. It's over. Summer's over. Like July's over next week. And then it's August.
July is not over next
back
week.
To school.
Yeah, chill out.
July is basically over next week. Back to school shit gonna be in stores in a minute.
I haven't even started my summer adventure yet.
I know it's over. I'm sorry, Inca. Your move is your summer adventure. That's it.
Damn.
Christmas
cold
be
world.
I'm just saying. I'm just warning y'all. Oh, and we didn't tape on Juneteenth. Juneteenth was a disaster.
Yes.
Corporately. Yeah. But yeah. That's it. That's all I got. In my
so room. Real quick, I'm gonna just hit on a couple of things. I mean, there's a lot of politics shit going on. I might touch on a couple of those things later.
The world's on fire.
The world's on fire for sure. Just wanted to mention Usher's Tiny Desk concert.
It's so good,
which is really good, and has created, as of now, the meme of the summer with the watch this. I wanted to die though,
because literally, as soon as every corporate, this is the bad part about it starting on a Thursday or Friday of a long weekend, is that by Tuesday, every corporate account, every
doing it.
Account,
I see it.
Every
see month, it.
Like Tuesday, they
KFC.
I'm not even seeing any people do it anymore. It's just corporations and brands and like New York State senators. I'm just like, okay, it's dead. It's dead. It's done.
It's such a great meme, though.
It is.
Shout out
it
to
is.
Him. It and is, yeah. I think it's at like 7 million views now.
Yeah, I had sure, a little viral so moment off that meme.
I thought it would be actually higher.
So I think like 8 of those views are me, so you're welcome.
And he's doing his thing. I mean, like, he's got the residency. I know they're starting that back up soon. Got the
but let me also interject. Tiny Desk has been, like, if y'all only watch Tiny Desk series when it's somebody that goes big, go mine through them. Like, they're always excellent.
Yeah, they're all good. They're all good.
There are some, Monica has a really good one too. Like, there's some really, really great ones.
T-Pain's, Mac Miller's before he passed was incredible. Yeah, there's a lot of really good ones.
Thames is really good. You never know who you're going to see in the background singers. That's always cool.
Yeah, it was dope.
And it's dope because I don't think they ever pan around the whole room, but it really is like you're in the middle of NPR's first floor and at somebody's desk, like legit. It's so small.
And they'll pan and it's just like 25 people standing there singing
so
along.
It's so tiny in there. Yeah, it's really small. So it's a dope vibe.
I know brought it up, but Essence Fest, we're going to just talk about the performances now. Before we jump into that, it's been so long, but let's just do a BET Awards mention. We missed that as well. So BET Awards was actually a pretty good show, and as far as the performances go, in my opinion, I really liked Money Long. I like Lizzo killed the opening. I'm blanking out on who else performed, but there was some good performances.
There
were
some good performances. I think that visually it was really stunning. Everybody that came on stage had like a great set, which I enjoy.
I'm not comfortable with Diane turning like sexy. I don't like that.
I'm not comfortable with the announcement.
Her name is Marseille Martin.
I know a name, but a name Diane to me, a name only. Just like I posted at Essence. I'm gonna call her by name. Thelma and Penny.
Yeah.
Was doing the next slide, and she always gonna be Thelma. I know her name is Bernadette Stainis, but she Thelma.
Thelma. The thing about first of all, yes, the BET Awards was excellent. It was the best one I've seen since Easy 2018, 2017. But even with the sound issues. But the thing about Masai's announcement that made me cringe was like, I know it was more of a warning in advance, like aunties and uncles stop telling me to get in the house. Mm-hmm. But I'm just like, she's developed so fast over the past couple of years. I was like, yo, she just perked a lot of creeps.
She was like, I'm about to be 18.
She was like, in X number of days, I'm going to be 18. I was like,
I'm about to be. And did you catch the smoking thing?
No.
She said something like, because, oh, I don't smoke weed. And she kind of did like the,
Yeah,
like, so she's already, I mean, again, I'm like, sure
I'm
she's going to
be outside.
I kind of am outside on the low, but like I'm about to be outside, like not hiding anymore.
Yeah.
And she got a bunch of money. So she's going to be moving and grooving.
I mean, she was wearing a Versace Couture bolero.
Yeah, on stage. And her red carpet look was fucking stunning. I was just like, I tweeted it. I was like, my side of that announcement just stressed me out. That's why I tweeted. I was like, that announcement just, and everybody was like, yo, like, stressed me out. Hard body.
I will say I enjoyed the show. I'm a little, I think we need a new host for next time.
Yeah,
agreed.
I'm tapped on Taraji. God bless her.
I mean, like, no shade.
God bless her. But I was just like a little change. And I guess with Mr. Long, we might as well keep it all real. Didn't love Puffy's performance.
It wasn't great. I feel like nobody did a sound check.
Well, a couple niggas wasn't even what you say, babe?
I got something to say.
Go ahead.
I didn't watch the BET Awards and I didn't watch Puffy's set.
Okay.
But what I do want to say is, can we stop with the let's give them their... Like, if you're getting your flowers every 2 years, my nigga, then are you not getting your flowers? Like, I'm like, we've seen this show.
Literally.
I'm no disrespect to Puff, obviously. The run of bad... I'm from New York, my nigga. I'm from Brooklyn. Like, I know what Bad Boy meant. I know what it meant for not just for music before, what it did for fashion, what it really, and also what it did for music. A lot of you niggas got deals because they didn't want to miss out on the next Bad Boy.
Yep.
And you niggas sold a box of hand grenades and only one worked.
A lot of niggas put on basically a Puffy uniform.
Yes.
And walked into labels and acted like they was Puff with the shades and all that shit and got a deal.
A lot of you niggas got deals. And that's perfectly fine. But I do want to have, like, if every 2 years you're getting tribute and, you know, let's reminisce performances, like, we don't miss it. We don't miss it.
Right.
Like, you got to give us a chance to miss. It's like the reason Motown 25 is great is because, you know what I'm saying? It was 25 years, my nigga. Like, they, you know what I'm saying? If you had Motown 22
and Motown 24,
17, then nigga, 25 ain't really popping like that.
Yeah.
I agree. But
it was basically the show that he did
in 17.
17, minus people because Styles P wasn't there. Right. Who else? There was another person.
But Shine was there. That was a big moment.
Shine was there, which was dope.
That was big.
There was no Mace. It was a lot of people, but anyway, honestly, like, dude, you're supposed to be being tributed, so sit down and let somebody else do it. Why are you performing?
You're supposed to be being tributed. You're supposed to let other people do it. And actually, I get why they actually put Bad Boy artists up, but in theory, if you're gonna follow what they always do, it should have been other people outside of the system, outside of Bad Boy artists doing. Mm-hmm. Bad Boy music,
like the remixes and all that type of stuff,
or like no, I mean just doing the songs, but usually it's done by other artists. But it's different because Puff's not the artist; he's the producer, label head, But it's like, to Sean's point, social media and this give people their flowers thing. Listen, if BET ain't never done shit else, they done a tribute.
Yeah.
If they ain't done shit else on every BET whatever,
they've done some really good ones. Some excellent ones, amazing ones.
When they did the BET Honors, if BET ain't never done nothing else, they've known how to give a tribute, and they're doing tributes to people at earlier stages in their careers now. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess maybe because it's the BET Awards, but whatever. So, and to Sean's point, Puff has had, he was honored at Clive Davis's gala, I think in 19. We did the last Bad Boy joint at BET Awards. It's like 5 years ago, which led to the Bad Boy reunion tour. Mm-hmm. We had a fucking documentary on Apple Music. Like, this is, but what it really is, if we keep it in the stack, Puff has a new project with Motown.
Yeah.
So he's going into a new chapter. So part of this is to be timed around a new release, whatever. What I want to talk about, though,
Love Records.
Yeah, but, well, I want to
speaking
talk about
of the Puff. Kanye. Oh, yeah.
Just for a second. Who got up on stage.
Who's that?
Kanye. Who got up on stage nigga. Dressed like that motherfucking rock from Pokemon.
Come on, man.
This nigga had on a hat and glasses and a mask.
Nigga could barely breathe. Leather, nigga breathing.
And them big ass wellies. And fuck, but nigga breathing all heavy through the fucking mask.
And
you got a full mask. You got a full mask over your face with sunglasses, nigga. You look like the Invisible Man. What are we doing? I feel like he was about to do green screen capture.
I'm especially annoyed at our community as a whole and
co-signing this fuckery.
Just the way that we have this unbounding forgiveness for people who do fucked up shit. There's no reason Kanye West should have been on stage at the BET Awards. Period.
He did this shit yesterday, my nigga. Like, he did this yesterday.
Yeah.
Like
the Trump hat is still white. Like, the letters are white. Ain't no dirt on that bitch. It's
I can't, but I understand, and this is where I think BET sort of misses the boat. Is that they try to play both sides against the middle and they try to placate and make sure that they want to be socially conscious and socially aware and politically active and all of those sorts of things.
But then they want the numbers.
Then they want the numbers, right? And my thing is, I am not asking you to march in the fucking street, okay? If that's not what you want to do, that's perfectly fine.
Right.
But, like, commit to one fucking thing. Okay,
yeah.
And having him on stage is nothing more than an attempt to get a viral moment, to get the numbers, to do those sorts of things. Like, he does not even have relevant music to this show.
No,
right.
He is not even remotely. He doesn't have an artist connected here.
Yeah.
He's not relevant. Cool.
When was the last time Donda was nominated at the BET Awards?
Donda, too, was nominated for a couple of things.
Whatever. They did that because he was showing
and
up.
Jesus King. No, yeah.
They did it because he was showing up.
That was definitely negotiated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Nigga, I'm not showing up if you're not even nominating me.
And
whatever. Like, it's a fucking joke. Like, it's a fucking joke. And no one said, you sure, my nigga? Like,
is nobody
and
else
it's
can get?
Very, it's very clear that he does not respect the process. He's not going to rehearse or pre-write anything in a teleprompter.
Yeah, he's
going
to go ahead and wing it.
Babyface was looking at that nigga like, what is happening?
Let me tell y'all something. Babyface is a shady ass nigga. I was like, I wish I could have been around to listen to Babyface talk about that shit.
Because
I know he was talking about that shit.
I just want him to lower the shades just a little bit.
What? 63-year-old nigga from Indianapolis?
Yo, and like smoothly shady. Like, he sounds so kind. He sounds so kind when he's doing it that you'd be like, wait, did that nigga just say?
I know he
went in, not just on Kanye, but Puffy's rambling ass.
Yeah, Puffy shit was trash. I'm not gonna keep going on Puff because there's several things that could place that go. I'm not gonna do it. The last thing I want to say is, I don't even know. I mean, they might be, but how close are Puff and Kanye really?
I don't even.
I'm saying they know each other. Close. That's what I'm saying. Right. But I'm like, these are. I've never seen Prince.
I could have thought of so many producers to come up before Ye. Like
so many.
Like.
Or an artist, or just somebody relevant.
Period. Mary was literally in the motherfucking audience.
Yeah.
Or maybe she wasn't at that point, but she was there. No, she was in the tribute. Mary's literally there.
I got one more thing to say.
Go ahead.
And this is like kind of off topic, but it's kind of on. So in the Puffy tribute, did y'all catch what Lil' Kim was wearing?
Yeah. I'd
like to move past this era of wearing like leotards and pantyhose as if that's like the whole outfit. I'm really excited for fashion change because
with Kim there's so much more to unpack with that.
I know but I'm making like a broader point where do we just not wear pants anymore? Are we just I know this is very auntie of me, but like
pants are dead.
But it's been 10 years since Sasha Fierce. We can move on.
Legit. Exactly. Thank you.
So, we can move on. No, what I wanted to say about this is the last thing I'm gonna say, and this is hypercritical, and I know it. All that footage of Kim, not Lil' Kim, but
Kim Porter
in the tribute did not sit well with my spirit.
No.
Agreed.
It was one thing if it had been like a little bit. It was a lot. It was a lot.
Like or just like one little photo collage at the end nothing. Where we're like missing.
That wasn't even a lot. I'm missing you part was basically to her. Biggie was like way in the end.
Andre in it at all? Like
Andre was in it quick, very little, very little, mm-hmm. very little.
Yeah, like I was prepared for that to be Dre. Like if he had used that same amount of footage and it was Dre. That would have been completely understandable, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. But for it to be Kim, I was like, this is exploitive. And then he didn't even thank his motherfucking kids and all these motherfucking people. I was like, nigga, if you don't thank your kids, like, he ain't acknowledged it. He ain't shout them out. Not nothing. And if I was Quincy, I'm sure that Quincy is already just like this nigga every day. But I would have just been like, fam, how you not even, whatever. That part annoyed me.
I think it annoyed
immensely.
A lot of people.
It annoyed a lot of people. Immensely. I was like, yeah.
The whole tribute was annoying. And then the in memoriam, whoever decided to add the gunshots as a sound effect in the beginning of that and then put rest in peace, bro versus Wade on that.
That
black
was wild.
Frame
that was really wild. That was fucking really wild. Insane. That was really wild. That was really wild. Yeah.
That was a weird choice. And I mean, I get like it had just happened. There was a lot of
That's what Sean was saying though. There was clearly what's up? I can't think of the word. They were truly trying to get viral moments.
Right. But also, they wanted to seem socially conscious.
Yeah.
It shouldn't feel like an afterthought, though. Like, that was so thrown together. And, it was just in poor taste, in my opinion.
All right. Another thing that was in poor taste that we missed to talk about was Versus with Omarion and Mario.
I can't think of another...
Watch that shit.
I can't think of another, like, artist mistake that has had repercussions that have been this... fast coming and detrimental in days following a Versus.
It also completely changed people's perspective on both artists. Like, first of all, who knew Mario was gangster?
I did.
And secondly, I mean, he's from Baltimore, obviously.
Yeah, and born in Baltimore to a drug addict mom. I definitely knew he was.
But he let that Be More come out. Which
it came out all the way.
But then also, you know, Omarion's whole internet persona is supposed to be like he's all zen and holistic and unbothered. That nigga was bothered as fuck.
Fuck. And then Ray J.
Shout out to the new group RSVP, which has formed as a result of the Versus.
No, we're not gonna jump off of Mario just yet.
Please.
That nigga sounded god awful. And the fact that we've been those of us that are in entertainment, we've seen artists come into the game that are not natural singers, mm-hmm. that they are not sort of like these, they don't have the pipes, but they have the work ethic.
Right.
And what they do is they learn how to sing.
Yes.
During the fucking 10 years or 15 year period that they have, you get vocal coaches, you get you know your keys, you know
how to breathe.
You know what you can do and what you cannot do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these niggas, with all this jumping around and gyrating and humping on the goddamn microphone and eating watermelon, the first, you know, my old ass nigga, first thing I thought, they done fucked up some good watermelon.
Watermelon on this bullshit.
That watermelon looked perfect.
Perfect. I was like, man.
You know how hard it is to get like really good.
That weird split in the middle. Like,
because I just bust open a watermelon from the watermelon man, and my shit was trash. So I'm hot. Like, nigga.
Watermelon ain't got nothing to do with this. Why you gotta bring the watermelon into
I ain't never heard about eating watermelon being sexy. Like, what the
this
fuck
nigga
is that?
Took that no, personally.
Like, nigga, what happened to mangoes? Get a mango. Nigga, like, nigga, like, what the fuck?
It tells me none of them know what the fuck is really going on.
Yeah.
And nigga, it was just, it was bad, but it was also a point of, so it was sort of the line in the sand. And this was one of the things that even though you know, Cypress and Onyx Hill, which was maybe I think the previous verses.
Yeah.
It was not well tuned in. Like, people didn't really talk about it as much.
But it was still a good show.
It didn't hurt Versus as a brand.
No.
This hurt Versus as a brand. Like, this was the kind of shit that I think impacts them from getting those next people.
Yeah, because it was monkey shit. It was monkey shit.
It was like, what are we doing?
Because the other thing was like the damn, what you call it, the undercards were because you knew that you chose artists that couldn't carry a full Versus. Like, you were
hilarious.
So you basically tried to make it the Scream Tour Versus. No, yeah. But I said on Twitter, I was like, this is what happens when you get artists who have sung over backing tracks their entire career because they're busy cutting flips and doing herkies on stage. Mm-hmm. Like, that Scream Tour generation don't sing. They don't. They don't. Ray J could never sing. Ray J could never, ever, ever, ever sing. Omarion could never actually
sing.
Couldn't sing. Mario could sing. But that's like
Ray is one of those singers that for him to get like a 65 on the singing test, all the sun, the moon, and the stars.
Gotta be perfect.
Gotta be aligned.
Had to be aligned.
Like,
yeah.
It has to be like in perfect fucking sync for him to get a 65 on that test. And my nigga, it might be 64.5, and the teacher might bump the nigga up.
Yeah, great on the curve.
Like, yeah. So, and that's fair. And we don't expect that from him, right? Because we understand what Ray J is, right? No one is going to Ray J for vocals. And while I get that niggas don't think that they're going to get, you know, choir soloist vocals from Omarion, they definitely should be at 15-year mark in your career. They should be getting you on fucking key.
It should be You
should not sound like that, okay? And I understand that I come from a world where I went on tours with people that were real fucking singers. So I grade in a bit of a harsh way, but that was fucking unacceptable. No,
trash,
like, by honestly, if a promoter paid for that shit, like, you might not leave the venue, my nigga. Like, back, like, in 94, them old gangster niggas,
yeah.
you might have had to kick something back.
Do some shit like that. Do like some shit like that up in Detroit, nigga. You got a problem.
Yeah, niggas might have met you at the Red Roof Inn in the lobby, nigga.
Let me hot you the member. You know what I'm saying? So that was the disaster.
Let me just say
one thing. It was a train wreck. And also, but also what happened, everything y'all said is 100% correct. But then Usher's tiny desk hurt it even more.
Because it was like,
because you see, like, this is This nigga's top tier. This is top tier vocals compared to that bullshit we just watched 3 days ago. So that really hurt him even more.
I have a very off topic shout out just before I forget it, because I was just looking at my phone and somebody said, "All right, I'm gonna say it. I want to give Steve Harvey some pussy." And not for nothing.
Right.
Shout out to Marjorie Harvey.
Marjorie, bitch, did it again. Because listen, right? Because listen.
Got him that new stylist.
This is the first year that Steve is going to the shows with Marjorie instead of just dropping in.
Yeah, popping
while
in.
While she's at Fashion Week and doing dinner right quick. He spent the last year proving he could do this, that he could be on her arm for some fashion shit. Listen. So Marjorie,
somebody clearly talked to Steve and said, "Hey, bruh, like, you got, you know, goo gobs of bread, so that's not the issue. There's this young boy here who may, I don't know if he styles Marjorie
He styles Marjorie.
And I'm sure the stylist kid too was like, "I could put you in some shit where you're not going to be looking like, you know, Uncle Junior, like looking young and stupid."
Uncle Junior anymore. It's been an evolution.
No, I know.
It's been an evolution. I will tell you.
He wearing Givenchy now. He wearing fucking Celine.
She got him off for 16 button double breasted immediately. But he was.
I have seen the evolution because I watch Family Feud when I'm cleaning up the house. It's the safe show that me and Ivy can watch because Ivy likes all the fanfare.
Okay.
But anyway, I've seen this nigga go from the very shiny, you know, far apart pinstripe, double breasted, you know, trash suits with like the Windsor knot to very clean, very tailored shit I would wear myself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not been quick.
Like there was something that looked it looked like a little bit of Bloomingdale's off the rack, even though I'm sure it wasn't.
But even his line,
So,
his line that's in Macy's is different now. It's more tailored my dad expressed frustration with the suit, with the fit of the suits now. So
right, this is Sean's doing it here.
So what you're seeing also is the different fits of a male suit. So like initially, what you were saying with the pinstripes. That mm-hmm. is what they would call a regular fit, right? Mm. And then he shifted into a modern fit, which is a little more tailored, right? So you see the back kind of come in.
A little closer to European. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then he's gone to, I don't want to necessarily Euro cut, but he's going to much more of a fine tailored, right? So the pants fit like exactly. Mm-hmm. on him. There's a little less room in him. And Steve, the one thing he always has had is that he's always been daring. That's what separates Steve is not afraid to wear some shit that is going to flop. Mm-hmm. And that's what has always separated him. And that was what was made. That's what made the Steve like.
And he wears everything confidently. No matter what
laugh,
he wears it confidently.
We laugh, but my nigga, Steve changed fucking men's fashion for like a good 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely.
Nigga, I know I have a picture of me in a 6-button double breast somewhere.
Nigga, I went to prom in 1999, so I absolutely saw that Steve Harvey.
Yeah, and he sold a lot of them suits at K&G. A lot of men bought those suits. You can laugh if you want, but a lot of people bought those suits.
Because what he did was he stopped men from being in navy, black, and brown.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he allowed you to get a little splash of color. You might have had a different
fabric. Without looking like a pimp.
Yeah. And so there has been an evolution, and he does have a sense of style. But also, your palette changes as your experience changes. As he's gone from, you know, being on tours and comedy, doing comedy shows, to being in these more refined spaces that are really focused on fashion, his palette has changed.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just people that know. It's like you could drop a motherfucker into a watch store and he might say, I want the Rolex, because he knows Rolex.
Yeah.
He will walk past a fucking $300,000 Patek. Because he doesn't, because he's doesn't not
know.
Listening.
He doesn't even know.
He doesn't have it. And that's fine. But like now as that grows, like that suit he had on yesterday, that deep purple with that sort of twill look, like that is like a fuck. That's an amazing suit, man.
There ain't
a lot of 60-year-old niggas out there from West Virginia.
I give him, like I said, he's wearing some real fly shit. You know, he's wearing shit that I would wear. I was like, he has a Celine joint. I was like, okay, Steve, let's see what we're doing. You know,
I don't want to fuck Steve Harvey, though. Well, no. I feel like that went a little.
I want to wear some of the shit he has on. But my point is that Marjorie is now like, okay, you can. Like, I know there were some moments where Marjorie was like, you can't come out with me looking like that. Like, I know those moments happen.
Because she met him with that fucking toupee on.
She got him to stop that.
She changed that nigga life. She changed that nigga life.
Like, literally. When you talk about let me upgrade you, that's Marjorie's motherfucker.
That's what I was singing.
Let me upgrade you. Like, that's Marjorie fucking, like, listen, Marjorie is that nigga. Honestly, I stand that bitch so hard, and she's low with
even
it.
Even so the low. Tertiary she's niggas so that are it. Attached to the Harvey name now are elevated. So shout out to them. That.
Oh wait, so I want to jump back into Essence Fest just to talk about the performances. They streamed it this year, which was great. On Hulu, and I didn't see a lot. I saw a bit of the Super Lounge, and I saw the Isleys and Bobby and them New Edition on Sunday night, and then of course Saturday night was the big performance, which apparently was the highest rated performance and the highest ticket sales performance of all time of the Essence Fest, which was Janet Jackson. And everybody I haven't read anywhere that didn't say Janet murked it. and
well,
killed
if nothing it. Else, Janet is going to give
I've
you
read
a show.
And heard a couple things that did not say Janet murdered it, but it's
I ain't see those.
Respectful, but respectful of Janet. Nobody's going to disparage Janet, but I definitely saw some like, yeah. But
they hate you because she killed
no, I don't think, but see, that's the thing. I don't think they're hating Jeff Wright. Like, Janet did Essence in 18. That wasn't that long ago, especially when you factor in the pandemic. So that wasn't that long ago in terms of Essence shows, right? She did Essence in 18. If you have seen Janet at any point, and I'm not saying this to be a hater at all, if you've seen Janet at any point in this stage of her career, you've seen it. Like, you've seen it. It's not, she, to me, and I'm not a Janet stan, but I'm a Janet fan. To me, it's like, she's not the artist you see over and over and over and over again. So the people who I heard it from are kind of like, yeah, I saw this already. So, which is also one of the reasons that I ended up deciding at the last minute not to go to Essence, which I'm mad about only because my phone was blowing up all fucking weekend with people tagging me in Method Man videos and pictures. Niggas literally in New Orleans like, yo, Mess here, where you at? Mess just walked into the dressing room. Are you near the dome? Where I was like, oh my, because everybody just assumed I was in NOLA. But
if it was in the building.
That aside,
I just need his wife to go ahead and be done with her turn. Like, it's enough already.
Like, And I don't even think she would. I'm like, she had to be, what's her name? Tasha, Tamika, it's one of them two names. But I'm like, she had to be at Essence of all places. But he was like moving around Dolo and was just like outside, like just out. Anyway, that's a whole nother subject.
Anyway.
but with Janet, it's like, yo, she's a great live show. Yes. If you've never seen her live before, she's not the live show you see over and over and over again. And I mean, granted, also, Janet is in her 50s. She's never been a big singer. You know what I'm saying? It's always been more about the dancing and the choreography and the movement, where she still gets in. Like, she still puts on a great live show. I'm not saying anybody says she was trash. I'm just saying that I know a lot of people who saw her at 18 who were like, I could have done without doing it again. I was good. I mean, it was great. Yeah. I'm like, here, whatever. Yeah. I don't think that's hating. I did not watch the streaming. I didn't watch the streaming because Sean talked about this.
Me neither.
I go to Essence for the energy. I don't want to watch that shit on TV.
I like, watched the stream. It was good.
If
it was
I'm
good.
Not into, I know, I'm not saying it wasn't good. I go to be there.
Like, I've been more than once with no concert tickets at all, where just I just went down there for the vibes, for sure. And those were the best times, honestly.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did a good job of streaming. Angela Yee was the kind of like the host.
And they
I'm so glad I didn't go to that.
So she was interviewing people, but you know, and like I said, this was like, they showed a lot of the panels and stuff like that too. But yeah, so I just think it was a smart move by Essence and Hulu to do it. And I'm sure they're gonna do it again for the near future. But you know,
I love this
show.
Era.
I'm gonna tell you what I didn't love. I didn't love New Edition because
I know these are your people. No, New Edition. Them niggas don't perform at the same level. You go. It's a nostalgia. It's a nostalgia act. You go to.
But my problem with New Edition is I'm gonna need Bobby to get in shape, and I'm gonna need Bobby to take this choreography shit serious. Because
Bobby
was
is
so
a
many
stroke
times,
survivor. Jeffrey,
was,
Bobby had a stroke.
I
the fact
that
Bobby can even fucking do any of that shit.
I understand. Did they just bring him out for his part? Did they just bring him out to his part?
Yeah. Because, it's like Voice to Man with Mike. Like, lean into that. Let the nigga be on the stool while everybody
else is. Because
they actually have tailored the show so that Bobby...
But even with that, that nigga's slacking on so much of the choreography. His vocals is not with it. He's not in shape. He's got this big ass belly now.
Right.
And he's not in shape. Now again, I don't expect him to look like Bobby Brown from Rock With You. Of course,
I get
not.
It. But okay, so Bobby New Edition was at.
So I knew your ass was going to defend this nigga. The nigga was trash.
I'm not saying he's not trash. Jeffrey, first of all, I already said. New Edition is a nostalgia act. You go to
see. I'm talking about that nigga though.
I understand. Let me finish.
All right, go ahead.
Bobby specifically.
Defend your boy.
And this is my defense. I see New Edition every year some iteration. In 18, Bobby was scarily thin. In 19, he was starting to gain some weight back, but it was really only in his gut. Like, to the point where in 19, people were wondering whether he had something going on, like some kind of kidney disease, some kind of cardiovascular disease, whatever. He gained weight over the pandemic. his show apparently is about him trying to get back in shape, right? It but is. Before all of that, first of all, Bobby's the bar Bobby's being measured against is old Bobby. Niggas couldn't do old Bobby at Bobby's age.
I'm not measuring him against that.
No. I disagree. The bar I just Bobby want the is nigga getting to measured stay against is the other people in the group.
Exactly. Right. That's what I'm doing. I don't think I'm going to do that shit. I just want the nigga to stay on step with Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and fucking Johnny. That's
but
all I want
the
nigga
thing
to do.
Is, BBD has been out there doing all this shit consistently all these years, right? Bobby
left.
What
about Johnny?
I mean, Johnny does a couple of moves, but he don't move as much as Ricky. BBD does more than anybody. They do more than anybody.
I get that.
Because, they do more than anybody. So I'm not saying that Bobby don't be missing choreography. I'm not saying that he don't miss the steps. What I'm saying is that for those people who are going to watch, who are going to New Edition concerts, I'll speak for hardcore indie fans. We don't give a fuck.
You expect the fuckery.
As long as they're alive and on stage, I'm going to see them niggas. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I just want that nigga to keep up.
I don't think that what Bobby's doing is for lack of effort. That's what I'm saying. I don't think he's just like, fuck it. Because I've seen...
We're not saying that either.
I think he's kind of like, fuck... I think he's kind of like, fuck it as far as like getting in shape. Getting in shape.
I don't think that's fucking either. Bobby has small kids. He's trying to get in shape for way more reasons than just hitting these tour steps.
But he's not in shape. He's got.
I know, because we had a whole pandemic where he wasn't fucking sore. That's what I'm telling you is that before going into the pandemic, Bobby was scarily skinny and looking like he was ill. We don't know what the fuck is going on. That's my point. And we can't keep just being like, nigga, this fat and da da da. Because we don't know. We literally don't know.
I know you're going to offend your boy. I just thought that he was dragging down the show, in my opinion.
We just want them to lean into it then.
Exactly.
Any black man in his 50s, I'm just not going to be that quick to criticize because I'm not gonna be that quick to criticize literally any of them because like I didn't even know Bobby had a stroke until the fucking Bobby Brown story, you know what I'm saying? Like, but I do know that in 18 this nigga was skinny as a twig and he still couldn't do the moves the same way, so it's not because he's carrying the weight.
I feel like we've had some decent performances from Bobby post stroke. If you look at the mm-hmm. first signs of stroke that we started to see, where like one side of his face was not reacting as quickly as the other, that's mm-hmm. been some decades now, and we've had some good shows since then.
And we had some good. Have they been good? I don't miss them. Bobby.
I don't
not,
think they've been like this.
Though. Bobby's not been able to keep up with choreography since he came back to touring with the group in full, and not one time, not a single fucking time, never. There was some points where he just literally wasn't doing any of it when he first came back.
It was terrible.
That's fair.
But let's move on. It was terrible. Anyway. It was terrible. I want to give a quick shout to Sean had to jump. I want to give a quick shout to Shaka Zulu, who's recovering from an insane shooting.
Tell the people who Shaka is, though.
Shaka is he's from New York. He's from Mount Vernon, actually. Started off as a radio programmer in Atlanta. He went to college down here. Started off as a radio programmer. Then went on to form a label called DTP with his first cousin, Chris Bridges, better known as Ludacris. And they had...
And his brother Jeff.
Piece of Jeff Dixon. Piece of Jay Dixon. And they had major success with Luda, with Chingy, with Shauna, with Bobby Valentino. Then Shaka has gone on to work at Spotify for a while, and he's I call him Clarence Avon 2.0, and that Shaka
is. I think we talked about this on the show that he was the heir apparent to the ambassador role that Clarence has. Yeah.
So Shaka's the guy that you call for whatever. Like Shaka helped Kasim Reed get elected. He helped Makisha get elected. He just helped Andre Dickens get elected. So he's very involved in politics as well. He's definitely that behind-the-scenes guy who knows everybody. Everybody knows him. You come to Shaka to work out any problems or come to him for advice. And he's, just like Mr. Avant, he's almost, like, shockingly open. Like, you could, like, he's not, like,
he's
hiding.
He's so accessible. He's
so accessible. It's like I said, I've met Clarence, met Mr. Avon a couple of times over the years. And, like, you walk up to him, he's talking to you. He's like, hey, sir, how you doing, son? And then, where you work? And I remember I told him I worked a job. He's like, Barry Weiss. Man, tell that motherfucker. Like, he's
right.
He's really that guy. You know, he's like, he's really that guy. He's like, he'll tell you. He gave me his phone number. He was like, call me anytime. Like, he's very, and Shaka's the same way. Shaka's extremely.
Yeah, the last Essence, I was with Shaka, because I was with Whitney.
Yeah. They're very close. They're like brothers.
They're very close. Yeah. And so I was with them most of the time, and literally walking through the crowd with Shaka, it's like he's stopping, he's shaking hands, clapping people on the back. Like, it's all that shit.
It really
all
is that. That. It yeah. really is that. Yeah. So him being involved in this type of incident was like, that's Shaka. It was.
The first thing I said was, "Who would shoot Shaka?" Like, that was the first thing. Yeah.
I equated it to, and it was a little more harsh, so I'm not trying to be funny, or please forgive me if I'm offending him, because I'm really not trying to. I equated it to when Mr. Avon's wife was shot. It's like, shoots Clarence? What are you doing? Like, that's Miss Avon. What the fuck are you doing? You don't do that. It's the same with Shaka. Like you said, who shoots Shaka? What the fuck are you doing? That's not, you don't do that.
Exactly.
But anyway, he's recovering nicely. He had a couple surgeries, and now he's in the rehabilitation part of it, of the process. But he's gonna make it through, which is a very happy thing. I gotta jump for 2 seconds, but y'all can talk about, y'all niggas can talk about, you want to talk about some politics, Roe v. Wade or Highland Park or Boris Johnson or January 6th?
I don't actually want to talk about none of that. What I will say is, like, here's why I don't want to talk about none of that shit. The reason I don't want to talk about none of that shit is because we've been telling y'all, let me not say we told you something. It was inevitable that this was coming. It doesn't mean it's not trash. It doesn't mean it's not tragic. It doesn't mean it's not terrible, but like...
But it's not shocking.
It's not shocking. This weekend, especially coming off the holiday weekend, so many non-Black people were like, this weekend was so awful. This holiday weekend was so terrible. How is everybody doing? The world is such a mess. And I was like, I'm chilling. Because I've been compartmentalized all this shit, because Black folks have been in a consistent state of trauma, first of all, forever.
Of trauma, like, and marginalization, yeah, our entire existence in this country.
But we've been in an exceeding state of trauma since 2014, since Ferguson. Like, exceeding state of trauma, you know, stress, outrage, horror, sadness, disbelief, shock, all of those things.
Mourning, grieving,
like all of those things. And so now that we're at a point where, you know, it's coming closer to home for some other people, everybody's clutching pearls and they're horrified and we have to do something. And the thing is, like, what upsets me about America, and this is why I have to compartmentalize it, what upsets me about the West, the American exceptionalism shit is a disaster, and it's how we got here, but it's a Western thing in general. Mm-hmm. By the time something happens, and people, like, by the time something happens, it's too late to course correct, right? Like, the time to course correct is when you see it on the West. But we're at a point where nobody believes it's going to happen until it happens. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies. Everybody's like, oh my God, what are we going to do about SCOTUS? You knew she was going to die. Like,
we could have done something about SCOTUS when you were praising, like, her stubbornness from not giving up her seat during a Democratic turn.
Like, everybody is now like, we need to just expand the court. We could have just voted. You know, so, and I'm not saying just vote. I know voting in itself is complicated and hard, but guess what? That's on purpose, because people want to marginalize. And that's my thing. Like, all the things that people complain about why voting doesn't work is actually the reason you got to keep doing it, because all that is on purpose. It's all on purpose, meant to suppress your voice. So if you just opt to not do it, that's the point. Like, voting is so difficult and they work so hard to even suppress votes, marginalize the impact of votes, because they don't want it to be impactful. Exactly. So if you just give up and be like, well, then fuck it, I'm not going to do it. I don't understand that logic, only because unless you are leaving this country the logic that, like, I'm just not going to vote because it doesn't work makes no sense to me.
Because you're giving them exactly what they want.
You're giving them what they want, but also
you're punishing anybody, dumbass.
You are still impacted by the fallout. You can't
opt out of this. You're punishing yourself.
Yeah, you can't. Like, there's no such thing as opting out of shit. The one thing I will say, because I don't want to get into all the specifics of the, like, of the, there's two things I want to say. The first thing, this is really urgent. I need everybody, even our listeners, to hear this, because I think it's still not clicking for people. What is constitutional or not constitutional is a matter of interpretation by the Supreme Court, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. We have the most conservative Supreme Court in 50 years. In mm-hmm. 50 years, actually maybe a little bit more than 50 years, maybe right? More.
So, who are only representing the interests of maybe the maybe 15 or 20% of the United States as a whole.
Exactly. So when you see Ron DeSantis on some bullshit, when you see motherfuckers in Arizona on some bullshit, you can't anymore be like, oh, that's some Florida
shit. That's
them. Arizona shit. That's some red state shit. Because what the right does really well is they start their battles locally. That's mm-hmm. what we don't do. We complain a lot about what's happening on the executive
national scale.
Completely mm-hmm. ignore where our voices and votes can have the most impact, which is local. Like, there's motherfuckers from QAnon getting on school boards, right? Like,
yeah.
School boards.
Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, they're in Congress.
Like, that's what I'm saying. It rolls up. Like, if you're ignoring your school board elections, your sheriff elections,
city council
elections, mm-hmm. your local judge elections, your representative, like, you got to start.
These are the things that are impacting your actual life. Right, not the president.
Because everything that's happening right now or not happening is a matter of who's in Congress. And everybody's just so focused on what's Biden doing. It's like, okay, but when you decided you weren't going to vote for president, did you at least vote down ballot? No, like, did you at least vote for Senate? Did you at least vote for local judges? You can vote for prosecutors. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are so many fucking offices that are elected that directly impact what's going on. Because a lot of stuff that people complain about, it isn't even a national issue. It's a local issue, right? Or a state issue. So I say that to say, you know, people are still like, oh, that's red state, that's blue state. What they're very good at, red state, when you see laws pass in a red state, and McConnell has packed the local courts, I mean, the state level courts. So if it goes to the state Supreme Court, it passes that. What used to happen is it went up to SCOTUS and it would get shot down. So we would be like, okay. But what happened is we would stop worrying about it. They would go back and just try some other shit until they get it right. So now when you see shit happen on a local level or a state level, know that it can happen. It's going to go wide.
Yeah.
It's a test case. Like, they do test cases at state level. So there is no longer any such thing as like, oh, that's some red state shit. We ain't got to worry about that because we have a conservative Supreme Court. And I think that people still haven't really let that process. There are more right. Like, and also the fact that nothing is permanent. I think there's also this thought that once we gain rights, once we gain a certain amount of ground, it cannot be rescinded. And even the overturning of Roe versus Wade doesn't seem to be driving that home. Like, y'all really think they won't go but so far?
Y'all think shit is like, sweet. Y'all think shit is like, sweet and it ain't.
Yeah, it's like somebody will stop them. Who's going
to?
The SCOTUS is the ultimate decider of American law.
That's it. There's nobody above.
They need a checks and balances too, but that's it. They are the
Biden one. Can't do nothing. What they want, what they've been talking about forever, and I don't know if this happened in our lifetime.
Expanding the court?
Yeah, it's not to go to 12. Happen.
Because it's never happened.
Yeah.
It's because not 12, happened.
Because I don't understand why they want to go to 12, because 12 is an even number. So, right. Like, the point of having 9 is so it always skews one way or the other, 5 to right. 4, 6 to 3, whatever. So 12, is it could be just 6 to 6 deadlock and right. nothing moves. I don't understand.
And the other thing is that it could also bite. Then this is the other thing. There is a history of things that liberals put into practice first that that conservatives have taken and wielded against us. Gerrymandering is one, filibustering is another. We expand the court, that could also work in their favor at a different point. And I tell people, I was like, imagine if this was flipped and it was Trump in office and he was like, well, I'm just going to expand the court. We would be saying, that's unfair. You can't do that. That's a da da da. That's not, I understand why Pelosi and Biden say that's not the solution, right? It also is like, well, we didn't exercise our civic duty to impact changing the way we could have. So instead, we want you to do something on a legislative level, which is also unfair to me, right? That's not how this is supposed to work. I just want everybody to take civics classes. That's all. I just want motherfuckers to understand.
Well, not even do that. Watch fucking at the Schoolhouse Rock. Yeah, just watch that.
I just need you to understand how this shit works and understand that, like, people keep saying, well, we have the majority. No, we have a break tie vote in Kamala Harris, but we also have two senators that always vote with Republicans.
Yeah, Manchin and Sinema.
And Manchin just likes to throw grenades and walk away. He gets off on this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's always been this dude. Always. The same new. So the solution is
he's like the most Republican Democrat ever.
For real. And his constituents know exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And they keep voting him back in.
Right. So when you're like, you want to boycott all of whomever, I'm like, nah, y'all need to figure out how you're going to hit Sinema and Manchin. Specifically, because both of their terms aren't up for like 3-4 years. They ain't got shit to lose.
Nothing. They out here winging it.
Nothing.
So it's fucked up, man.
I just need everybody to understand how it works, because this is a disaster. But the path here was clear. If you've read any history books on anything, any kind of liberal democracy, like the road heading here was clear. America is not impervious to the same bullshit that other governments have gone through. It is an experiment. The experiment is fucking, well, actually, it's not failing, because the framers never intended for it to be this inclusive. You know, and it's like, I get really frustrated about motherfuckers who complain, but you have no solution. Again, even if you want to talk about radicalists and revolutionaries and locals and people be like, burn it all down. When you burn it all down, you got to build something in its place.
Exactly. Well, the problem is what's is going to happen. And again, niggas is kind of sleepwalking. And Clarence Coon-ass Thomas told you, this is the first thing. Next thing, we're going after the gay rights shit.
Well, no, first they're going to make all, well, okay, so there are several things that fall under the same precedent as Roe versus Wade, and that's birth control being legal. Mm-hmm. That's gay marriage, that's interracial marriage, and that is also like it being illegal to punish same gender sex acts as a point of
law. Yeah, so basically, if you and your wife is getting down with a little anal, and you told somebody work the next day, he was all up in my ass. That's that girl and that lady. She tells at the job, you know, Clarice want to call the police.
Right,
your ass, your husband, and you can get locked up. Not now, but that's what they're.
I think there are still some states that have sodomy on the book. It, what's coming next is going to
no
be
no anal play.
What's coming next is going to be birth control in general. But with that being said, don't be that person who goes out and starts hoarding Plan B pills or pregnancy tests unless you have a distribution method. Like, there are organizations on the ground who've been fighting reproductive
rights. Plan B about to be the new Molly.
Right. But there have been organizations. Find a local organization that's fighting reproductive rights. Give them some money. So there's going to be legal birth control. Then it's going to be same-sex. This is going to be gay marriage. Then it's going to be like, we're going to go back to being illegal to be gay, period. Like, you know, like that's on the table. I really need
to. And then they're going to go to, like you said, interracial marriage.
They're not going to go to interracial marriage until Thomas.
Because Clarence Thomas is on that.
He'd be dead soon.
But as soon as he dies.
Yeah, it's over.
That's coming. You were going to say something, Inka?
I was just going to say, while everyone's taking that civics class, can we also take just a regular biology class?
Please.
Just want y'all to know a little bit about periods, a little bit about birth and eggs.
Body
and
because the other problem
just
is
how all that works.
Some of the men making these decisions literally don't know how periods work. Literally.
At all.
Why can't you just stop it?
Yeah. Why can't you just stop it?
The one congressman who was talking about putting a camera down your throat to see if you're pregnant, to see, like, if the fetus is viable.
Yeah,
and we were like,
happen.
My nigga.
People who still think
none of that is connecting.
All you're going to see is what I ate for dinner last night.
Right, exactly.
Or even people who oppose the lifting of the pink tax, who think that we can hold our periods and use the bathroom like men do.
Or think it's like one day.
Squeeze tight.
There was one senator who thought that tampons gave women sexual pleasure, like dildos. Yeah, and there was, I literally read an account of a woman who literally worked in a senator's office, and she was like, I need to go to the restroom. And he was like, literally, can't you just hold it? She was like, what? No, we can't hold it. Be like, that's not something. He was like, are you serious? I thought, and these are people who are married and live with women in their homes. And that's the other thing, like stop acting like periods are something that little boys don't need to hear about, please. It's not. As much as you cut and bleed and do all this stuff, just because the blood happens to come from a different orifice does not mean that it needs to be like, oh, like the fact that some grown men just won't even buy tampons. Like, it's so stupid.
But
it's
we still don't, and then that goes into the whole thing we talked about before, about which I still see online about women, you know, not having orgasms. And like, it's fucked up out here, bro. It's fucked up.
It's stupid. So, yes, biology classic, civics class.
It's fucked up.
I'll be honest.
Real quick.
The other reason I'm compartmentalizing is because in my mind, this shit is too far gone for, and this is going to sound very dire, and I'm sorry, but this shit is too far gone for a course correction in my lifetime.
No, agreed.
We're going to
die. I don't think that's dire.
Yeah.
That's also why I can't think about it too hard, because then I think about my daughter, and I'm like,
then you get, and
you start spinning out. So I got to a point, and Jeff, you'll appreciate this. I got to a point where literally it clicked for me, because I used to be like, how did the civil rights generation like go through this, not knowing what was going to happen? And as soon as I realized like this shit ain't going to change in my lifetime, I actually found so much peace from that, because it was like, there's still urgency in the fight, but it took away this sense of like, oh my God, we have to fix it right now. Cause I was like, can't. This is a fight that we now are laying groundwork. This is gonna be Gen Z's fight, right? Yeah. Like, this is gonna be their moment.
Good luck, y'all.
In a few years, I was like, we gotta lay the groundwork and get them ready. So I may not get there with you, spirit now. But
I think
we also
have to start in a different place than our generation and people older than us are trying to start. And it's at stuff that's like term limits and age limits in these offices that are going to be the change.
Definitely term limits for everything. Definitely term limits for the Supreme Court.
Term limits for Congress. You should not have had the same seat. Since
the 70s.
Like,
there's no reason for like octogenarians and whatever we call Chuck Grassley
and these niggas
to die in office.
There is not,
absolutely.
And even for the seat of POTUS, if there is a minimum age to be president, there should be a maximum age to sit the presidency. It's not ageism to say that.
I don't want an 85-year-old president.
Even if it's 70, like if Biden running again doesn't give Democrats a hope of a whisper of a chance.
No.
Because that nigga's dying in office. Like, if we do this for 7 more years. Like,
I'm hoping it's Gavin Newsom, because let me tell you who the Republicans are about. The Republicans are putting up Ron DeSantis. And if DeSantis gets in office, it's a wrap.
Oh, it's way worse. It's way worse.
It's a fucking wrap. Our votes will never count again in life. Like, so I really do think we're at a point where, and Xers, this is partly on us. One of the gaps I've noticed is that, so for me, I always go and vote because my great-grandmother died when I was 26. My great-grandmother made sure somebody carried her to the polls as long as she was physically able in her right mind to do it, because she was acutely aware of what it meant to not be able to vote. Mm-hmm. That was enough for me, right? So because I had that direct knowledge, experience of hearing about it from her, from my grandparents, you know, whatever. But for generations past us, the idea of doing it because previous generations couldn't, because they told you need to, whatever, I understand how it's lost on them. I also understand how, like, even when people are like, why haven't we had riots and uproars? It's because we're also relatively very comfortable, right? Like, if you're well-housed, if you don't have food scarcity, if you got clean water, if you got clothes on your back, if you got a little change coming in, like, revolution requires you being able to walk away from all that shit. And it's really hard to imagine. Even all these people being revolutionaries on the internet, you're not thinking about what's going to happen when the internet goes out. Right? It's like, people don't really understand war. People don't really understand revolution. People don't really understand that, like, not everybody makes it out of that motherfucker. And nobody's trying to die for this shit. A lot of people were okay to die for this shit in the 60s because it was that dire already. Yeah. Nobody's trying to die for this shit right now. So it has
I will say, also, like, as a millennial, our entire adult, existence has been plagued with this kind of turmoil. Yeah. So I think we're burnt out in a way that even like Gen X isn't, and Gen Z hasn't had a chance to be. So like if we're the leaders, like if we're the people that y'all want in office, y'all have to look elsewhere.
Y'all want to talk don't about shit too much for me. That's the problem. Y'all be wanting to talk, unpack, debrief, whiteboard, fucking
because boomers did not talk.
No.
And we are largely digital, but not really. We learned in a very analog way. And then Xers don't understand us. So we have
don't. Y'all are too emotional for us. We don't get it.
Z because don't understand us either.
I mean, yeah, but Xers are also, we're a generation of just do it. So we be like, y'all talking about it, can we just do some shit? Like can we cut the talking and get to the doing? Like, that's our thing. But that's why I say it has to be Gen Z, because Gen Z...
It has to be.
Gen Z, got it. Yeah, Gen Z also seems to have a different understanding of the stakes already.
Right? I just want to sit on the porch and rave at the cars. That's what I'm trying to get to. Y'all don't have all this shit. I want to sit on the porch, wave at the cars, and go to bed around 7:30.
When the revolution comes, that's when I'm taking my ass back to my grandma's house in South Carolina. Like, for real, I think that there is still just not an understanding of, like, it's 100% going to get worse, y'all. I'm sorry to say it. It's 100% going to get worse. But I think it's going to take a certain amount of losing shit. Like, I really think it's going to take niggas not being able to vote to be like, oh shit, I should vote. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So like, real quick before we end, I just want to mention, Boris Johnson is cooked in England. He's out as a prime minister.
But he's not till October. So a lot of people think.
Yeah, he's gone, but they kind of have like a committee or whatever and figure out a replacement in October.
But the way they just walked out on his ass, like.
Yeah, they're tired of fuckery.
Yeah.
Highland Park shooting was terrible, but I didn't even really pay much attention because there's nothing going to happen. It's just,
that's what we said while you were gone. People were so horrified over the 4th that almost every black person I know was like,
so what? Like, I mean, I don't say so what because I don't want anybody to be hurt, but like, I mean, Buffalo just happened. Texas just happened. Y'all killed a bunch of babies.
We've had 310 mass shootings this year already.
And nothing's happened. And in Texas, more and more shit's coming out. They were like now the police chief, the mayor of Uvalde said he hasn't had a briefing since it happened.
That's
so there's a whole huge conspiracy between what's going on with the cops and
they're trying to.
That's just a fucking disaster.
Oh, I know what I meant to ask you that's related to that. Have y'all seen this? Is he from this North Carolina state senator who has talked about how he's stockpiling? He's black. He's stockpiling AR-15s in case he has to overthrow the government. I'm like, this motherfucker might actually get us gun reform.
Is that the one that's that has the commercial with him fighting the KKK?
The Ku Klux Klan? Yes. Yeah. That motherfucker might actually get us the gun reform. Because that's what happened with the Panthers. In California. He might actually get us the gun reform in his own backwards way.
The former Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, was murdered yesterday at a speech. The Jan 6 committee has been doing hearings. That's just bonkers because everybody's basically turning on Trump as they should. And I think that Rudy's up soon to testify along with some others. So Trump is he's apoplectic because he's like he knows the walls are closing in. Even his daughter, his daughter was up there last couple weeks ago. Like he was wilding. You know what I'm saying? Like his daughter didn't even hold him down. So,
Speaking of Trump, the British version of him, Boris Johnson, has stepped down.
Oh, yeah, I think
my bad.
You weren't paying attention.
All good.
I was zoning out.
Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, so it's a lot of mess happening. Oh, and then I guess we ended with this. Robert Sylvester Kelly was sentenced to 30 years for his his shit. And he has two
and
trials.
And that's in Atlanta or Illinois?
York. That's New York.
So he still has to face trial in Chicago.
Yeah, he still got to go to Illinois. And I think there's one in Minnesota. So he's never coming home.
Nor should he. Because doesn't think he did anything wrong. And
I gotta say this, though.
I know you do.
I gotta say this.
I know.
I am clearly not saying he should not be punished and get out of. I'm not
to compare it to somebody else's sentence.
No, I'm not comparing it to nobody. What I'm saying is, it's just still because of knowing him back then, knowing him personally, it's just shocking to see the fall.
Yes.
It's just shocking. Like, I, being around this guy and being, at the label he was signed to and knowing you know, the amount of money he generated and the amount of the talent that he had and where he was and writing hits for literally everybody from R&B to pop artists to rap artists to like just across the board. The guy was probably couldn't have gotten no bigger as an R&B artist. He was literally the number one R&B artist in the world.
Yeah.
To see that fall to where he is now in Rikers singing on a goddamn phone for some nigga's daughter and right. just looking terrible in every mugshot in 30 years. And I'm sure the Illinois sentence will be way harsher because he did yeah. most of the stuff there.
There, you know yeah. what I'm
saying? So
it's shocking to see the fall.
Shocking. It's a
but
shocking.
It's the entire music industry's fault. Because,
oh, yeah.
because the entire ecosystem, not just the label, radio, promoters,
publishers,
media, black media, mm-hmm. publishers, everybody, because like I said to somebody, because you know the fucking Tariq Nasheed, you know, dispatched his bots about the sentencing, and I knew they all came from the same place because they all had the same talking points. But my thing is like, we've been calling grown men trying to get it, underage women R. Kelly for 20 years. Like none of this shit was ever a secret.
No, it wasn't.
Everything was known. Chappelle Show jokes, fucking black comedian jokes. Mm-hmm. The goddamn Boondocks episode with the R. Kelly trial was almost mm-hmm. 3 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like none of this shit has ever been a secret. The one debate has whether you know young women could consent or the girls and young women could consent or not. But like we've known exactly who this nigga is for a very long time. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, even if you didn't think he was a sociopathic fucking sexual predator, he was clearly touched. Everybody knew that for a very long time, right? Yeah, but like the entire ecosystem of the music business, which has always kind of adopted a "it's not for us to get in the moral shit" approach, allowed this nigga to continue on as long as he did. And the thing is that he kept escalating. That's the thing, and that's what we all got to sit with. Like he kept escalating,
kept going up the ladder,
kept making things more complicated, and he has been protected for so long that now he genuinely believes that his genius makes him exempt from the rules of regular people, right? Mm-hmm. And that's everybody else's fault. That's the fans' fault, the label's fault, radio's fault, media's fault.
As long as he was pumping out them hits and generating that type of revenue, then people was like looking the other way, like from Aaliyah, you know, from that was 94. I mean, up to now.
When people be like, I mean, it's still not complete justice because so many of his victims went without justice.
Yeah.
And sometimes at the fault of their own family for taking settlements or just saying that the girl was fast or whatever. So it's still complete justice, but it's definitely not unfair. None of this shit is unfair. That nigga die in jail. That's the least he deserves.
Apparently, I read today he's marrying supposed to be marrying one of those girls, the ones that was on the documentary.
Because he needs somebody who's going to come visit him.
And the conjugals and all the, you know, so.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like,
but he definitely, like, he, look, I mean, he obviously was, you know, sick and he had some mental illness and, you know, we can debate where that comes from and so on and so on.
Right.
But like, he definitely got by the end. He wasn't just sick by the end. He was, like, depraved. He had, girls shitting in buckets and all that stuff. Like, he was just, it was like, dude, what you taking it?
Like, there was some real cruelty in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It wasn't sexual. It was just like some like, yeah. It just got worse and worse and worse. And he clearly dove into deeper and deeper mental illness. He went further and further in. But as long as he could hit that stage and create those hits, people around him didn't really give a fuck. They were like, "Yo, the money that this dude makes is crazy."
Right.
But again, I just like I always tell people, pound for pound, he is the most talented artist I've ever seen. Me.
Definitely the most prolific, and you know, as a musician. He
could do anything. The nigga could do anything.
We can't ignore his catalog.
And they keep trying to. And I'm just like, look, the nigga could literally do anything. The nigga was making rap records. The nigga was making R&B. The nigga, I've seen that nigga sit down and play like anthems. Cole Porter on the piano. And he didn't read music. He just knew.
Yeah.
He was literally a savant.
Right.
Like, he could do anything. The nigga could dance. The nigga could do anything.
Right.
But again, that doesn't I'm not trying to say that outweighs or even matches the depravity he did, but it's just kind of to see that level of talent. But I guess to have that level of talent usually I bug the fuck out anyway.
Yes, and that's the problem. And that's
like Michael, like Marvin, like, you know,
that's something we're gonna have to contend with, like,
It's shocking that Stevie Wonder seems to be fairly normal.
Yeah, great art usually comes from very disturbed people. Which is why we've allowed great artists to be disturbed people for so long. But we have to figure out, and I don't know, I mean, some of this is an individual line, but the business is going to have to figure out like what the line in the sand is.
You saw the, real quick before, on that note, did you see this, that Beyonce is doing this thing now where she is checking the backgrounds of every writer and producer that is, or engineer, anybody that's working on this project
now. Amazing.
And if you have any issues, you're dead.
Far, we know that she's canceled, for lack of a better term, two folks that were going to be on the project.
Like, nah, I'm not fucking with you. Props to her.
I fuck with that.
I hope more people do that. Like I said, she's like, nah, you're not going to eat while you're out here doing this heinous shit to somebody and eat off my project. Nah, it's not going to happen.
They're doing thorough backgrounds on everybody. I know some people try to dismiss it as woke culture, but it's also a smart business move, because at this point, fans find it out, they're going to hold her accountable.
Because if Producer X does some foul shit and it hits the news, they're not going to say Producer X. They're going to say Producer X, who produced on Beyonce.
Her name
is in it. You know what I'm saying? And she had obviously had nothing to do with it, but she's like, I'm not even taking these chances with you clown ass. I think she learned from Detail. Detail is it's like, this guy is so fucking talented, but a complete lunatic nut job and an abuser of women. And he actually produced Drunken Love and some other things for her. He produced whole Hendrix album. He's done several things. He's incredibly talented, but he's locked up now for stuff. And I think after that, she was like, I can't have these type of people around because, you know, it's not good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Sean had to jump. He's getting ready for the party tonight. He had to do a walkthrough or something like that. I'm going to go give me a little haircut. I am my outfit. Put some starch on my shit.
Happy birthday to the amazing Missy.
Yeah.
And what else was I going to say? Oh, shout out to The Bear. I don't know if y'all are watching TV.
I'm going to watch it. I keep hearing
this is so good. Why is it so good? These niggas is in the kitchen every episode. Why is it good?
I can't explain it. But what
is it? What streaming service?
Hulu. FX, but Hulu. I think it's very underdog. It's very like Chicago institution of a restaurant. But this guy is a world-class chef who inherits the restaurant.
But he's like a drug addict and all this other shit too, right?
His brother was.
Okay.
The guy who he inherited this mess from was a fucking mess. But it's, you know, the turnaround and inheriting all these like old cooks who are setting their ways and just making that kind of change. I don't know. It's very good. Right.
I've been watching The Boys, which is...
Listen, that show is almost...
Season was so dark. I haven't been able to start this season yet because the last season went so dark. I was like,
it gets darker.
This one's darker.
I'm not ready yet.
I think that last season,
I was like, ooh, because the first season was still kind of like light.
It was a little humor, a little dark humor.
Yeah, it was a little humor. The last season got really dark, and I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for. But I finished straight. Are y'all Stranger Things people?
I am not.
No. Okay. I'm a dig in.
Yeah, I haven't watched anything consistently.
Only Murders in the Building is back.
I didn't finish that last season, so.
Okay, I need to get into that. And I finally finished Hacks. Y'all right, it was a great season. It felt so short.
Yeah, I feel like everything feels really short now.
Hacks is phenomenal. All right, so we're going to wrap it up on that note. I don't know when we'll see y'all again.
Yeah, listen. We're here. It's summertime.
Ink got to drive away across the country and stop at 16 baseball stadiums. We might not see them in September.
We appreciate y'all, the listeners' patience with us while we live our summer dreams.
So. We'll be back. We'll be back in the fall. And y'all take care.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.